This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo with Adam and Peter across Australia on the Community Radio Network. This week on Allegro Non Troppo, we're going to be talking to Bruce Atkinson. Bruce rose to gay media prominence in 2007 as he visited a gay sex club in Melbourne and reported his findings to State Parliament. In 2007, we invited him onto Allegro to explain what this was all about, as there were some conflicting points in reporting his comments. I was ready for a good on-air fight. I was expecting to find a redneck, right-wing homophobe. During the course of the interview and from the following his work in the Victorian State Parliament, I found Bruce Atkinson to be ethical, considerate, and I really respect him a lot. So do many other people in the gay and lesbian communities.
And on to, today on Allegro, we're going to talk to Senator Atkinson about the huge ethical challenges that face politicians, and in particular the ones that came up in the Victorian Parliament in 2008. Discrimination of abortion, same-sex relationship register, dying with dignity, the legislative changes to IVF.
How do politicians make up their minds on these and similar social issues? Do they have to follow the party line? What happens if they don't? Is it okay for politicians to let their religious beliefs influence what actually may be best for the community? For example, the RU486 abortion drug debate and Tony Abbott. Welcome, Bruce Atkinson, to Allegro Non Troppo once again.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here, and thanks for coming. Thanks for coming in. I've been following you quite a lot on the internet since we last had you in. And for those people around Australia who don't know anything about you, we'll just have a quick bio about you. You're in the Legislative Council.
Correct.
You represent the Eastern Region.
That's right. That goes from basically Baldwin out to Murralbark and from Listerfield all the way up to St Helena. So it's quite a large area.
And that's in Melbourne in Victoria. There are five other senators?
There's five representatives for that seat. Mm-hmm. And indeed, there's eight regions around Victoria, so 40 altogether in the Legislative Council.
They're not actually senators. I can't get my mind, because I have Lynn Allison in here from time to time. I've got this senator thing locked into my brain, but you don't actually have the title of being senator. So if I do accidentally start calling you Senator Atkinson, you'll understand.
Yeah, I sometimes use the term myself when I'm talking to people overseas to explain that you're an upper house member, and it does get across the message.
Now, you were elected as the member for the Eastern Metropolitan Region in the 2006 state election, and your current term of office goes until November next year. Are you going to stand for re-election next year?
Yes, I plan to stand again.
Oh, good.
I was actually elected in 1992. I came in with the Kennett wave in 1992. So, and in those days, I represented a much smaller area. But the changes to the upper house by the BRACS government means that we now are working on set term, which ends in November 2010. So everybody's out at election then, and certainly, yes, I intend to re-nominate.
You're a bit different to most of the other Liberals, aren't you?
I'm not sure if I'm different. I think that... Look, political parties are always a broad church, and members are at different stages of their careers, which means that they perhaps are somewhat emancipated in what they can say at times, and some somewhat constrained at other times. And personalities come into it, a range of experience comes into it, and I guess just attitudes to issues that are formed in terms of the way we go about our business of actually finding out what the community does think.
One of the interesting things I've noticed in my life experience, I just point out too, my father's a politician, so I'm pretty good at being able to get under the skin of politicians. One of the things that's happened to me quite a few times, I've met some politicians who've been fairly anti-gay in stuff that they've said, but they haven't actually known me personally as being gay. They've known me. And when they find out that I've been gay or I've told them, actually, really, a lot of them don't have problems with it, but they feel as though they need to take a particular public stance on issues. And it's this real contradiction that I come across frequently in politicians. You don't have that contradiction, do you?
No, I don't. No.
What you see is what you get.
But isn't that something to do with reflecting the opinions of the community they represent sooner than their personal opinions, do you think?
Look, I think that's part of it, but I think that there are also situations where people are very much focused on what they see as their political careers, and they don't want to rock the boat. And I think that there are some people who tend to keep their powder dry because they simply don't want to, raise issues that might be contentious and might see them as troublemakers.
I just wanted to quickly ask, do you think that community opinion has shifted, though, over the years towards gay and lesbian issues?
Oh, undoubtedly. I think that so many more people have gay and lesbian family members, friends, neighbours, people that they work with, and people that in that context of that relationship that they respect and admire and find to be, the same as them in every respect except one.
Professor Dennis Altman from the University, La Trobe University's professor on politics, says that he believes it's also a generational thing, that the current generation of politicians who are coming up through the ranks have lived with gay and lesbian people and it's been an acceptable part of their lives and it's just not an issue for them. The older politicians, probably the ones who do have issues with it, they're sort of not so much up front now. So he believes it's a generational change, and I think there's some merit in that. Bruce Atkinson, let's go over the reason why we had you here in the first place, because that was one of the most interesting things that I've encountered in my years on radio, was getting you in the last time. I was ready to have a really good go at you, because here we had...
I'm a pacifist.
This is the way it led up to us getting Bruce in the first time. All of these articles appeared in the newspaper and in the media about this politician, Bruce Atkinson, who went to a gay sex club and reported back to state parliament. Okay, now, then the media took their spin on it, and then people were saying how brave, how courageous that this heterosexual man went up to this gay sex club and that he went in to have a look and see what it was like, to find out if there was unsafe sex practices happening. Now, what happened is everybody assumed that you were doing an anti-gay thing. You were there to expose, and that wasn't the case at all.
No, it wasn't. In fact, I might well have just as easily gone to a heterosexual swingers party if I'd known where there was one on, for exactly the same reason, and that was to establish that... we were starting to let our guard down, and I think we still have our guard down on a number of sexually transmitted diseases. And AIDS is perhaps the flagship, but equally of concern to me in a public health sense is hepatitis and a range of STDs, many of which probably have greater prevalence in heterosexual sexual activity. But I was very concerned about the fact that some of the messages that we had and we were very strong on have in fact lost some of their potency. And I certainly share the concern of some people in the community, particularly many members of the gay and lesbian community, that some of those messages might well have been stigmatizing or seen as stigmatizing or picking on a particular section of the community and especially gay and lesbian people. But I felt that, in fact, some of the broader messages have also been missed. And I think that along the way, we've actually lost some of our firepower against some of these health issues. And I think some of it is simply because we have as I said, let our guard down, that our perhaps some of the programs haven't been properly funded, some of them haven't been properly targeted. I think we were talking offline before about the fact that the AIDS line had been abolished, had lost its funding. These are areas of concern. I think that there's a lot of political decisions being made without proper analysis of what we ought to be doing to get the best health outcomes and the best education outcomes for the community, and that's for everybody in the community.
Historically, these issues, what governments generally do is throw money at it.
Absolutely. And clearly they don't then monitor them properly. I think that there's as much politics in some of the lobby organisations as there is in Spring Street. And I think that we do lose the effectiveness of some of those messages.
When you went to this sex club, we know which one it is, but you know what impressed me is you didn't tell anybody which one it was. Why didn't you say which one you went to?
Because if I'd done that, the media would have turned up there. And it would have become a circus. And my concern was not to expose venues. And I said at the time, and I still maintain, that I think these venues are an important place, a safe place for people to go and to meet one another. I just want to make sure that they, all of them, recognise the importance of promoting and encouraging
And facilitating
safe relationships.
Sexual practices. Hmm. Did you discover that?
On that occasion, I didn't, and I obviously don't know whether or not that's improved or remained the same. I've got no idea.
From our conversation,
I certainly was concerned that time.
From our conversation we had at that time, we actually did establish that all of the facilities were there, whether people choose to use them or not. Is another thing, and that's the difficult part. So the message that we need to get out to the communities that access these venues is education.
Yep,
it's all about education, really. Educating people, not through fear,
yep,
not through discrimination, but just giving them the education. It comes down to choice, you know, and that's the difficult thing.
That's true. The one point that I'd also sort of make, and I think I made it on the last occasion we met, but it certainly still remains a concern for me, is that I think there's an attitude out there in the community that AIDS has been beaten, you know, that it's no longer a problem. And I think that there are a number of reasons for that. Obviously, the death toll, and there are more than 7,000 Australians who are no longer with us because they've died of AIDS. And I think that, you know, the cocktails of drugs that we have today have been terrific in extending people's lives, and people feel that they, you know, that it's no longer a death sentence. It's not reported because the media and the politician bandwagons moved on to other issues. And as a result, I think that people have sort of, in those personal choices that they make, have been thinking, well, you know, perhaps I don't have to worry so much about a condom. Perhaps I don't have to worry so much about safe practices, because it's really not the problem it used to be. This was, an early 1990s problem. It's not a problem today. And I think what we need to understand is that it's still a problem today. And in fact, an article that I was reading, and you'd be very familiar with, no doubt, from the research that's done here and the educational work that this radio station does, that there are now some strains of AIDS that are coming forward that are actually resistant to some of
that's been
drugs.
The case for some time, resistant, and then there's several issues which are developing as the virus has been around for a long time, not only resistance, but then there's this super infection.
Exactly.
Where people are getting two strains at the same time.
Yep.
Bruce Atkinson, so in all of this time that you've been in Parliament, in all of this work and research and stuff you've done into HIV, I want to ask you two questions. Do you know anybody who's died from HIV?
No, not personally, I don't.
Do you know anybody with HIV?
I probably do, but nobody that has identified themselves to me. But I have no doubt that in the work that I do and the people that I meet across the community, that I would know somebody.
The interesting thing is if in your work and you're across the community, people have cancer or heart disease, they'll tell you quite straightforwardly that they've got it, but they won't tell you that they've got HIV. Why do you think this is?
Oh, I think they still see it as a stigma, and I think that there's a fact where many people in the community would seek to avoid, seek to...
The fear of disclosure is a huge issue.
I would imagine it would be tremendous. And
so when the media and indeed governments go out and politicise and try to deal with this issue, I think they really need to keep that in mind. That's a very important thing.
Now, I think the support organisations are so crucial in that sense too, and to make sure that they are actually meeting the needs of those people.
The other thing that happens, of course, is fear. Fear of what happens if people disclose or discover. And the other thing which is we're going to discuss on Allegro with somebody from the Public Health Office and from the VAC, I think we're having the CEO, is this criminalisation of HIV. We've just seen the case in Victoria where somebody's actually gone to prison with a very heavy sentence for infecting somebody else with HIV. It's quite interesting when you look around Australia, this is happening in other states, yet the place where you think this would be the most significant crime, in Sydney, where there's 500,000 gay men, and there must be thousands of men with HIV, there's never been an incident. And so that says something about intervention, I think, and education programs in New South Wales. They seem to be better.
Might also be because it's difficult to prove.
Yes. Quite interesting. We're not going to talk too much about that because I don't have all the facts, but it's just one of these interesting developments since we were talking to you last 2 years ago. See, this has come around.
It is a matter of concern. I mean, at about the time that I actually went to the venue to, you know, which was on the basis of somebody who'd come to my office, I actually think that the motivation for them coming to my office was actually the publicised case of the chap at Coburg, which is the one that's now concluded. And I actually think that that was the genesis of the contact to my office. So it is an important issue. You raised the point of proportionality in terms of penalties, I think, in what you were saying, and I think that that's valid. But certainly, look, there's no better thing than for people to be educated and informed, and we've just got to make sure that the messages are out there and people understand it.
The problem about this particular case is the message that it sends out, where I think we all have to be really careful, and it puts more fear into people who are HIV positive. Should somebody become HIV positive and they've had contact with them, this puts them in this situation where it can be regarded as a criminal act. And that very fear drives the whole problem underground. People won't go and get tested. They won't go and get treatment. So that's why it has to be handled very, very carefully.
Yep.
I hope that the Public Health Department, the government and the agencies seem to be handling it. But time will tell.
Yeah, I thought that was a fairly clear-cut case, but you're absolutely right that even in examples such as that, there is often a lot of grey that surrounds it, and we've got a fairly litigious society these days, and you're right, we probably do have a degree of uncertainty, and certainly for people who are living their lives with the challenge of HIV, some real fear.
Yes, indeed. Our special guest on Allegro today is Bruce Atkinson. Bruce Atkinson, you're a senator in the State Parliament of Victoria, not a senator quite, but in the upper house. So just to educate our listener in process, so a bill goes before the lower house who debate it. They then pass that bill and it goes to the upper house where it goes through this similar process again.
Yes, that's correct. The difference now is, historically we've always called the upper house a house of review, whether it's the Senate or a Legislative Council or House of Lords in England or such like. It's always been regarded as a house of review. The obvious criticism of it for over an extended period is that it hasn't actually performed that role at all, that in fact it's been a rubber stamp for whoever's the government, particularly in the circumstances where the government also had the numbers in the upper house. What happened at the last election was that the government didn't achieve a majority in the upper house, nor did the Liberal Party and National Party combined. So
I think that's good, actually. I think it's quite healthy.
Well, it certainly contributed to, I think, a higher standard of debate, because no longer are people just going through the motions of set piece theatre. They're actually having to try and win the minds of three Greens members of Parliament and a DLP member of Parliament who do hold the balance of power.
Excellent, because people now have to really debate and get their heads around the issue. I think that's a terrific outcome.
Yep.
Do you like it?
Yeah, I do. I actually enjoy the I'm very, very committed to the institution. I think the institution is important, and I think it's valuable, and I think it can do great work. And I enjoy the challenge of the parliamentary environment. And so, and I'm an ideas person. I'm not the sort of person who goes after other people. I go after ideas. So this environment that we have now, I think, is a very positive one.
Let me say something very flattering, but it's quite sincere. Bruce Atkinson, you're also very socially aware. And you're also very ethical, I think.
Thank you.
You come across as being very ethical, but we'll be discussing that in the second half of our show this morning, because I'm going to ask you about some of the bills that came up between to the upper house. How often does the upper house reject something that's come from the lower house? Is it a frequent, or does it happen? Is it rare?
It depends the time frame you take it over. So in the past, it would have been rare. In the latest parliament, it has, there's probably been about five or six bills that have been rejected that have been sent back.
Anything significant or small ones?
There was one on nuclear power that was rejected because the Greens didn't vote for it. And I think it was the Labor Party had put it up, the government had put it up as wedge politics to try and split the Greens sort of put them on toast. But in fact, they looked at the detail of the bill. They realised that they were entering a bit of a minefield, that you know, they might well face some criticism from Labor. And we've actually seen, as Les Twentyman discovered in the Koroit by-election, that the fact doesn't always match some of the literature that goes out in election campaigns. So it was a pretty brave call by the Greens, but they actually looked at the detail of that legislation and decided that it wasn't appropriate, that it was a stunt.
It's quite interesting, though, even just the thought of nuclear power here in in Melbourne. Well, living in a safe Liberal electorate, I hope we never get a nuclear power plant near us. But did you feel the earth tremor?
Yes,
the other night. Yes. Yeah, I did too. Did you feel it?
I did. I thought it was because of me, but it wasn't.
But the interesting thing is, everybody's saying, "Oh, you know, Melbourne, we're so stable, geothermally stable."
Well, we are relatively.
And then we had this earth tremor the other day.
Yeah, but we're not on a fault line.
Let me tell you something. My house cracked.
Well, what can I say?
During the earth tremor. I don't actually know where. I haven't found it. Now, imagine if we had a nuclear power plant. I mean, I'm sure it would be earthquake-proof. But that's just one of the little things you have to bear in mind, isn't it? Sorry, that was a bit of a side issue.
It's interesting, though, that the green movement worldwide is now starting to look at nuclear technology, though, as a for energy creation, because they see it as the lesser of a number of evils in terms of the energy consumption.
Yes, indeed. Well, I don't know that we're going to have much option, really. We've passed peak oil. Our special guest on Allegro Non-Troppo this morning on the Community Radio Network across Australia is Bruce Atkinson. In the second half of our show, we're going to talk about some of the bills that came between the upper house, that came in the upper house in the legislation in Victoria, and we're going to discuss in detail Bruce's opinion of them. This is Allegro Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network out of radio station 3JOY, Joy 94.9, Australia's first gay and lesbian radio station, Melbourne, Australia. On Allegro today, we're talking to politician Bruce Atkinson. Bruce Atkinson rose to gay media prominence in 2007 when he visited a gay sex venue and reported back to the Victorian State Parliament. We've been talking to him about that, and it's been interesting. We've had some response from the listener wanting to know which venue Bruce Atkinson went to. Well, we're not going to tell you because we don't want it to become a media circus. And the reason Bruce Atkinson never informed the public or Parliament of which venue you went to is you didn't want TV crews and everybody turning up there.
Well, that it would be unfair anyway. Yeah. I mean, it's not just one venue it happens.
But we can say it in a coded way where only people of our community would know. And it's the place of many steps. They know instantly where it is. Bruce Atkinson, As a politician, you are charged with the responsibility of representing the people of Victoria in the Eastern Province, and you have to debate many serious issues of social concern. And from what I know of you, and as I said before, I have the highest respect for you now that I've got to know you quite a bit, you don't do this lightly. You take these issues very seriously, don't you?
Yes, I do. And I take them very seriously because that's my responsibility, frankly. I don't see that... interestingly enough, all of the political parties on many of these issues actually provide a conscience vote to their members.
Which, they do?
Yeah, and that really indicates that they also take them very seriously, and they recognise that these issues are issues that people draw a great deal on their experience, their knowledge, their values, quite possibly their religious backgrounds and so forth in arriving at conclusions.
Is that appropriate, that people take into regard their religious backgrounds when they're voting on things which affect all people in Victoria, many of whom are not Christians?
Look, I think there's no doubt that many do, that most do, and I guess what I would say is that I'm also a Christian. I mean, my grandfather was a Presbyterian minister, and I'd have to say in some of these debates, one of the things that perturbed me the most was the lack of, or perhaps not the lack of Christian values, but the fact that some people interpreted the God that I know as a very vengeful God.
Okay.
You know, I mean, and the abortion, we recently had somebody who claimed, and there's been quite a bit of information going around in emails and so forth, claiming that the bushfires, the tragic bushfires in Victoria, were the result of God's wrath over the vote on the abortion bill.
Let me tell you, that's
outrageous.
That's the Westboro Baptist Church. Everything they said, that it was God's vengeance. Yeah, it is outrageous. But was this in state parliament?
That wasn't in state parliament, but the emails and the information certainly gone around to members of parliament. Just come back to very quickly to your question, because I don't want to lose it. I think it's an important one. Look, I think people's religious values are a valid input to their decision making. But I think that it's interesting that when you talk to the church communities, there are very often quite divergent views in the church communities as well. They don't come as one on many of these issues, yes, partly because their experiences are also informed by different parts of their mission in the community.
Bruce Atkinson, you made a comment there I wanted you to perhaps clarify a little bit for us. You said that you uphold Christian values. What are some of these Christian values?
I think respect, tolerance, the freedom of individuals.
How many churches do you think actually practice this respect, freedom, and tolerance? Not many.
I think a number of them do, and I think
I put you on the spot, haven't I? Love this.
No, well, I'm reflecting on some of the churches that I go to. Look, I think that many of them do some terrific work in the community, and I think that they actually walk the walk. They don't simply talk the talk.
Can I give you a case example? The Salvation Army, they do a lot for the gay and lesbian community, particularly people who have HIV/AIDS. Yet, in their statement of principle, they're so against homosexuals. It's quite ironic, isn't it? It's almost contradictory.
Yes, I don't think that there are many churches that actually embrace the gay and lesbian community. I mean, it's been a very significant debate in the Anglican Church, for instance, in regard to the advancement of people to positions within the church.
And even in the Catholic Church, there's a minister up in Brisbane at the moment who's going against the word of Rome and doing his own thing for the people of his community, not following the political edicts that come out of Rome. So, look, I think it's changing, and it's good to see that this is happening. I'm an atheist myself, and that's the very reason I'm an atheist is the reason we're having this conversation, is I don't believe any of the Christian organisations I've been involved with show respect, tolerance, understanding, or anything like that. Let's talk about some of the bills that came up before Parliament this year, because I'm really interested to hear. Now, the big one that I covered this in the last year was the abortion, mm-hmm. the the decriminalisation of abortion, and I'll tell you why, Bruce Atkinson. Because the issues to do with abortion are very reflected across the whole of society. The three things that happen to people in abortion, women who have abortion, stigmatised, stereotyped, the discrimination, and they're vilified. And the same issues apply to gay men. Now, ironically, gay and lesbian men, gay women, lesbian men, ironically, within our own community, we were talking about HIV before. The reason people don't disclose their HIV status, from what I've read, is exactly the same sort of thing.
Hmm.
They get stigmatized. Now, when you went through the abortion, decriminalization of abortion, I think I copied a couple. I saw some comments that you made about it, that it's actually happening, so it's no good ignoring it.
Yeah, look, I think that's true. There's a very significant number of abortions in Victoria, and everybody would think that there are too many.
20,000.
Absolutely. And I think that there would be a unanimous position that there are too many, that we ought to be doing as much as we can to avoid having abortions arise by ensuring that people understood what they were getting into, again, you know, safe sex practices and so forth, so that people weren't in a position where they were forced to make these other decisions.
If we had more education about safe sex and so women didn't get pregnant, then we wouldn't have this particular issue of so many abortions.
I agree. I think our education on a range of issues, including abortion, including drugs and alcohol, is inadequate for young people going forward. But look, you know, coming to the specific debate, the concern that I actually ended up voting against that bill.
Oh, did you? And I thought you voted for it.
No, I ended up voting against it, and I voted against it principally on the 24-week situation. What I've done on all of the bills, that these controversial bills that come before me, I go out to my community with an extensive survey, if you like, of opinion. We go to churches, we go to community groups, we go to community health centres, we go to individuals, and we ask for opinion. And you know, you don't get a definitive position coming back from the community either. You get a range of opinions, but you get some really incisive inputs to the view. What I can say is that on this abortion bill, the principle, certainly of decriminalising abortion, I think most people felt that that ought to proceed. The real sticking point for many members of Parliament, me included, was that 24 weeks was just too late in the day to have, if you like, an unfettered right to abortion. Now, that's not to say that somebody couldn't proceed to have an abortion at 24 weeks, but it was simply to say that under the legislation, it would have been better to bring back the time frame to an earlier point, say maybe 20 weeks, maybe 16 weeks, and to allow women then who did need to proceed to an abortion, and there are certainly some medical tests that are fairly, you know, are around that sort of time, and that therefore might affect the judgments and decisions that people make, but to allow those to proceed in more of a medical model, if you like, rather than a choice model.
Can I tell you what disturbed me about the whole abortion debate? Because I'm very pro-choice.
Yep.
Right? But I'm also in a pro-life, so I have two contradictory mindsets about this, and I'm pro-life on one issue. Is at a certain time they have to actually kill the fetus before they can do the abortion, and I wasn't aware of this. I did quite a bit of research, and it was during the interview with Dr. Ken Old and Lynn Allison when I became aware of this. So while I support women's choice, I also understand that it's a terribly emotional issue, and actually having to terminate a life before an abortion is just awful. Bruce Atkinson, being men, aren't we lucky we don't have to make this choice ourselves?
Well, that's true, although many men are also involved in the decision, and it's I think it's agonising for partners, certainly if they're in caring and loving relationships. It's not an easy decision for both partners. But certainly, you know, the issue of the 24 weeks comes in part to that very point that you make, that, you know, there is no doubt that at 24 weeks a baby is a baby.
Yeah.
That in fact we are in some parts of hospitals trying to keep alive and give good and fortunate lives to children who are 21 weeks, 22
prematurely
weeks.
Born. Yeah.
And it just seemed a bit incongruous to be looking at 24 weeks.
All we can do is say we to the women who have to make these decisions and their people around them, do so with education, and we just support whatever choice you have to make. If you have to make a choice, then so be it. That's your choice. Bruce Atkinson, the same-sex relationship register for Victoria last year. Now, that was a media circus. It was huge, wasn't it? And you got a conscience vote. How did you vote? I don't even think I need to ask.
Yeah, no, that
if
one...
If you say you voted against it...
No, that one was all right. Look, I think, you know, that was an appropriate response, I think, to recognising that people in the gay and lesbian community do have genuine, caring, loving, ongoing relationships that have the same tumult as heterosexual relationships, but indeed have the same touchstones and of commitment that heterosexual relationships have, and I think it was important to recognise them.
Did you at any time, were you told that, was there a party line ever on this?
No, there wasn't.
There wasn't. So you had the Liberal Party gave you complete conscience vote across the whole spectrum of issues that go with this.
Yeah. The Liberal Party's actually very good on conscience votes. The Labor Party gives conscience votes, but, for instance, in some of those debates that we had last year, would allow a conscience vote on the principal issue, but not on any aspects of
amendments
or even some of the technical things. Whereas the Liberal Party had an open conscience vote on all matters, which meant that you really were able to pursue the detail. Because in some of this social legislation in particular, people have an acceptance or an enthusiasm for the broad brush of the legislation, but have genuine and real concerns about some of the detail and how some legislation is fairly hastily put together, and there can be consequences from poor drafting of legislation, and it's appropriate that that be pursued. That's the upper house's role.
There were some bills which probably were defeated, which are the one I want to talk about now. Oh, just before I go on to Dying with Dignity, with the same-sex relationship register, there are people within our community, and I just have to add, I'm not one of them, who are pushing for gay marriage or something like that. What do you think?
I'd probably be more troubled by gay marriage than same-sex register. It's an issue that I would need to give a lot of consideration to.
It's tricky,
I don't have
it?
A definitive position.
It's a tricky thing. I mean, we could sit here all day and debate about it, but it's divided our community because some of us just think it's ridiculous. We should be subscribing to marriage. I mean, in my mind, marriage is ownership, where a man owns a woman. And I see it like
it's
that.
Controversial. It's
controversial. Yeah, but it's true. Anyway.
I think at the same time, you know, I certainly have, and I don't believe any of my colleagues have any concern about the fact that many of the legal aspects that stem from marriage, it is important to have those available to the gay and lesbian community as well.
Yes.
And, you know, by that I mean rights to superannuation and property division and so forth that, you know, ought to be... I mean, it is my choice, it is your choice who we leave our earthly goods to. And I think that the law and government shouldn't be interfering in any way.
My partner, who I was with for 12 years, died in 1995, and you've got no idea what I went through because there was nothing that gave me any rights to anything. So it's good to see that this is also being enshrined in federal law, although that's brought
with
it a new set of complications. Bruce Atkinson, ART, Assisted Reproductive Technology. Now, you were the chairman of this debate, I believe.
Yes, I was. Yeah, I'm the deputy president of the upper house, so whenever we go into committee to consider amendments, I'm actually in the chair.
Quoting... In backing this bill, Liberal MP Bruce Atkinson said many lesbian couples already had children and had used reproductive technology, while childless heterosexual couples had also used surrogacy service. This is a direct quote from you now. If we recognise reality, what we are talking about us is these services already exist. So it's been around for a long time. People were going interstate to get IVF, and the surrogacy issue is still unresolved, isn't it?
Surrogacy was probably more troubling to me than the the other parts of the legislation. Interestingly enough, West Australia passed a surrogacy bill in exactly the same week that we dealt with the ART legislation. But it's happening, and I think that the bill was fair in the respect that it looked at a High Court decision, it looked at what was the practice, it looked at a great body of evidence that had been assembled by the Law Reform Commission, and I think that by and large it was quite a reasonable response to that. Although the bill was flawed, and Sue Pennycue and I spent a lot of time working on amendments to improve that bill, and I think we've actually got a much better bill.
Okay. Thank you on behalf of the community for the amount of work you put into these things. I want to talk to you towards the end of the show today about social fatigue, going through all of these deep social issues. Embryo experiments. Now, you voted in favour of embryo experiments. Is that right?
I voted on, in the most recent legislation that went to Parliament, I was supportive of the changes that were made. On an earlier occasion, for a broader brushed bill, I'd also expressed some reservations there. And the reservations that I expressed at that time were that we were passing legislation in Victoria without the national framework that was going to control this whole process being in place. I think we've got to be very careful about letting the science get ahead of our ethics, our moral positions as a community, you know, where we're at as a community, and perhaps even some of our legal tolerances. So, this is an area that is fraught, and an area that I think we do need to be very careful with.
Bruce Atkinson, all of these issues that we've been talking about really strike at the very core of emotional issues across the whole community. That's why
Absolutely.
I've got you in here
Absolutely.
Today, because I really want to... And you're good at speaking about this, so it's getting the information. The Dying with Dignity legislation was defeated. Now, there seems to be something of hypocrisy from an outsider's view, where the state parliament quite readily passed the decriminalisation of abortion, yet it wouldn't pass Dying with Dignity. Could you explain this to us?
Yeah, I think that was a really interesting one, and I think it was interesting in a number of respects. For instance, the Right to Life organisation was equally opposed to Dying with Dignity and encouraged its members to write to us. The volume of letters and other correspondence or communication that we got from people on Dying with Dignity was considerably less than on abortion, including from people who were Right to Life supporters. And I thought that was interesting. My interpretation might be wrong, but what I've even put to Right to Life themselves was that it seemed to me that a lot of people in the community thought we need to protect the baby because the baby
can't make a choice.
But at the other end of your life, where in fact you are afflicted with a terminal disease and terrible suffering, that in fact you ought to be able to make a choice. And clearly, virtually all members of Parliament, I think, have experience of relatives or close friends who have been in circumstances where the suffering has been intolerable, and that, I think, in many ways informed their votes. The concern that I had about that legislation, in principle, I support it.
And we're not talking about euthanasia here. We're talking Dying with Dignity. This is physician-assisted suicide.
Yeah, but yes, it is. But there are some who would suggest that even that was a pedantic sort of interpretation. That it still represents a euthanasia response. But my concern was that, unlike the other bills, the other social bills that came before the Parliament, this bill had been a private member's bill. And I actually think it was quite a well-drafted private member's bill from at my first glance. I think that the people who'd been involved in that, and it was across parties, people. It was just a member of the Greens, a member of the Labor Party, a member of the Liberal Party who actually came together to work on that bill and put it up. And I think that they did quite a good job. The concern that I had was that that bill hadn't gone through a full process for us to understand the ramifications of the detail.
It hadn't come through a parliamentary committee.
It hadn't come through a parliamentary committee. It hadn't even come through government departments who had an opportunity to perhaps be rigorous in their assessment of, does this clause mean what it says, or is it going to mean that we trigger off something else down the road? What I was proposing, and as we touched on before, I'm deputy president of the upper house, and what I was proposing, and in fact a motion that was put by another one of my colleagues to the parliament, was that we take that legislation off to a committee process, as we did with ART, and we go through it and we seek expert advice on to make sure that the clauses meant what they said they meant and that there weren't any unintended consequences that were likely to arise from what is a very important and terminal, in a sense, piece of legislation.
Okay. Two questions then. Has this happened? Is this going to
happen? No, it didn't, because Labor essentially refused to... That was one of the ones where they refused the amendments as a conscience vote to their members. So the result was that you had all of the Labor Party members opposed to it, and a number of the Liberals who were just diametrically opposed to the legislation were prepared to vote that way as well, which was enough to knock it off.
So it's lost.
It's lost in the in at least in the short term, but I think there will be more work done on that one. And I think,
But part of the things, responses that you've said before really apply to this. It happens anyway.
Well, I think it does, and I think there was. I think there's that issue, and I think that there are certainly some a lot of legal aspects around what is happening now.
We were interviewing some people last year, and I'm just off the top. One of the people were interviewing, her partner had died. She said, but the doctor gave her the pills and she took them. And so, I don't think she'd realised what she'd actually said, but he was sort of saying that this happens. Look, the interesting thing that comes from this Dying with Dignity, where they have this legislation in other countries, the thing that really surprised me is that of all of the people who ask for the medicine, because they usually give them medicine, an oral medicine they can take, which will end their lives. One third of the people who ask for it don't use it. Mm. They just want it there if it becomes necessary for them to use. Two thirds do take it. So that in itself tells us a lot, that this particular issue really needs to be thought out very carefully. I'm quite in support of Dying with Dignity, as are you, but we just need to make sure that these processes are covered properly.
I think a lot of the legislation that they adopted in Victoria drew some of its experience from legislation in Oregon. And certainly in Oregon there was, there hasn't been this great stampede of people, ending their lives. I think that it has been a responsible piece of legislation there by what I've seen.
I wanted to ask you one other thing, that's quite a debate in our community at the moment, and it's the situation of gay adoption. Do gay and lesbian people make good parents? Where they're queuing up to get us as foster parents. You wouldn't believe how much mail I get, and I went part way through the process of applying to be a foster parent. I thought, my God, what am I doing? No more nights out at the place of many steps if I've got to look after children. But it's quite this is another place where there seems to be this huge hypocrisy, Bruce Atkinson, is they say we're great foster parents, but we're not suitable to be parents to adopt children. What's your attitude?
Well, that was part of the argument on ART as well, that that gay and lesbian people wouldn't make good parents. And to be honest, and I think I said this in the Parliament too, I had more trouble with the concept of two men having a child than I did with two women, which...
Why?
Interesting, yeah. Probably the stereotype from which I came, the view that women are the nurturers in our community.
But Bruce Atkinson, you're a rational man and you're highly intelligent. You should be able to rationalise your way out of that mindset, surely.
Well, I voted for it anyway, so I guess that
But the vote's irrelevant now. I want to know why you thought like that in the first place.
Well, as I said, I think that it came from this notion that we have in the community that women are the nurturers. Women are the... And, you know, in many ways, that's an attitude that's predicated a lot of the court decisions in family court as well, the approach that we have. Now, I actually had some gay men who communicated with me over that, and I have no doubt that the home that they had established for their families was because they were already looking after children of their own. There was nothing untoward about that. That in fact it was a strong nurturing home and was going to be to the benefit of those young people. One of the arguments I had with a lot of people in the whole debate on ART was that the heterosexual community didn't have any great mandate when it came to being the best parents. And in fact, there are so many fractured families, so many problems within heterosexual relationships and broken families and children who are damaged as a result. And I don't think that, there's any reason to believe that that children are necessarily by some science better off in that sort of a family.
Bruce Atkinson, a little message for the community from you. Have you got something you'd like to say to our hundreds of thousands of listeners?
I guess the message that I would make is to encourage them to become involved in the broader agenda, in the broader debates, not just gay and lesbian issues, not just HIV, but in the broader debates, because they have a unique perspective, an important perspective, and we need to hear it.
All of these debates that you have in Parliament, do you ever just want to run away and scream? It must absolutely eat into your conscience.
It makes you think. It's challenging.
Do you go through fatigue?
I personally don't, but a lot of other members of Parliament did complain about fatigue on the issues last year.
The ART debate went till 2 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, it did.
It did. Bruce Atkinson, it's been fantastic to have you on Allegro. Thank you so much.
Very welcome.
Thank you for what you do on behalf of gay and lesbian people in Parliament. We really appreciate it.
Welcome.
A special guest has been Bruce Atkinson. Next week on Allegro, we'll have Corey Earlham from the Victorian Gay.
Look forward to.
Okay.
And that's it from us for now. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.